The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Acknowledge the local coaches whose mentoring has been instrumental in his early career, Mr. Ian Mosier, Corey Kent, and Kevin Dorey. On behalf of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly, I would like to congratulate and encourage Mr. Jake Lohner in his extremely promising baseball career. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Barring no more member statements, the House will now recess for a few seconds in advance of question period. Order, please. We'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The leader of the official opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Official Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, last August, the government assured Nova Scotians at the mental health unit at the Aberdeen Hospital that the closure there would only be temporary. Now, as recently as today, they still won't say when it will reopen, Mr. Speaker. We learned last week that administrative offices have been moved into the former rooms there, but we're also told that that is temporary, Mr. Speaker. So I'd like to ask the Premier, will he confirm for the House today that, in fact, administrative offices have been moved into the old mental health unit and that the move is not, in fact, temporary?
The Honourable Premier.
I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question, and I'll ask the Minister of Health to respond.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And what is taking place with the actual unit at the Aberdeen is that public health in their facilities had air quality issues and have moved over using just a small part of the space that has been the unit at the Aberdeen.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, how symbolic of the way the government is managing our mental health services when they tell the people of Pictou County that the closure there is only temporary and now they're moving administrative offices into some of that space. Mr. Speaker, this is no way to run our mental health system. But they still have an outstanding promise from the government to reopen the short stay unit there, Mr. Speaker. I'll ask the Minister of Health directly, will he tell the House now when that mental health unit will reopen?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. What I can tell the Leader of the Opposition and all people in Pictou County is that there are an array of mental health services available both at the Aberdeen and in the mental health clinic in New Glasgow, as well as other providers throughout the county. As far as the Aberdeen short-term psychiatric unit goes, getting that decision is still a work in progress.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, that array of services does not include a short-stay facility in the mental health unit of the Aberdeen Hospital, a crucial inpatient facility for people in northern Nova Scotia that are in need of mental health services. The minister himself assured the people of Pictou County that that unit would reopen, that it was a temporary closure. Now he says that it's under review and that it's not up to him, it's up to the health authority itself, Mr. Speaker. I'll ask the minister a simple question. What has changed since he told the people of Pictou County he would make sure that the closure was only temporary?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And what I can say again to the people of Pictou is that there are services that are in place. When they started a recruitment process, they've run into challenges around recruitment. And we know that at some point we will make a firm decision on what future services will be offered at the Aberdeen.
The Honourable Acting Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, last week teachers across the province voted convincingly against this Liberal government's most recent contract offer. And Mr. Speaker, it's clear that teachers weren't pleased with the ultimatum that had been handed to them by the Premier and his government. Teachers have made it clear they want to participate in good faith bargaining, and they want an opportunity through collective bargaining to improve classroom conditions for the benefit of both teachers and students. Mr. Speaker, it's been over a week since the teachers held their vote, so I want to ask the Premier, can he please provide the House with an update where his government is in regard to contract negotiations?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank the Honourable Member for the question. I want to tell her and all members of this House, and indeed all Nova Scotians, this government is committed to living within the fiscal framework, Mr. Speaker. We put a fair wage offer on the table to teachers across this province at the same time as we were investing in classrooms. We capped class sizes from P to 3, Mr. Speaker. We took 200 outcomes out of the curriculum, Mr. Speaker, to improve the environment in the classroom. Mr. Speaker, the very day they voted no, we had teachers across the province representing grades 4 and 6 to do the exact same things, Mr. Speaker, to reduce the pressure that's put on classrooms and outcomes that aren't, we believe, are unnecessary. We've invested in literacy tutors, Mr. Speaker, math tutors. We brought in back reading recovery, the very thing that government cut, Mr. Speaker. We, like teachers, have invested in the classroom, Mr. Speaker. But indeed, this province has tough financial challenges, and everyone is going to have to participate in us getting back to fiscal health.
The Honourable Acting Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, more and more weight is being put on teachers each and every day in the classroom. The minister today stood up and did a message about coding now from P to 12, which is a great thing to happen. But, Mr. Speaker, more resources and more support for teachers needs to happen. They can't keep having this stuff piled on, Mr. Speaker. So my question for the Premier, when will his government ensure that the concerns of teachers are heard in terms of what's going on in the classroom and the pressures they feel?
The Honourable Premier.
I want to thank the Honourable Member. I want to assure all teachers across this province on October 8, 2013, their voices were heard, Mr. Speaker. We continued. Mr. Speaker, we made a commitment to public education when we became the government to reinvest the $65 million that was cut by the former government, Mr. Speaker, by the very member who stood in this House. Mr. Speaker, we've hired more teachers, Mr. Speaker. We've capped class size in P to 3. We'll continue to do that throughout our public education system. We've reduced the outcomes, the expectations, Mr. Speaker, that government and every government before them, Mr. Speaker, loaded on teachers. We've reduced those outcomes, Mr. Speaker. We've refocused on literacy and numeracy. And I'm extremely proud, Mr. Speaker, that our government is introducing coding from P to 12 across the public education system, Mr. Speaker, because parents are asking for it, Mr. Speaker, and students deserve the very best.
The Honourable Acting Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, as I said, you know, we all agree that students will benefit from coding being taught in our schools, but it's now another additional bunch of stuff being loaded onto teachers, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, my question for the Premier is this. Will the hard-earned collective rights of teachers and civil servants be respected in the coming weeks by this government, or will those rights be taken away through legislation?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I want to thank the honourable member for the question. Over the last number of months, we've been negotiating with all public sector unions, Mr. Speaker. We've clearly focused on establishing a wage pattern that reflects, Mr. Speaker, our ability to pay, Nova Scotians' ability to pay. We believe we have a wage pattern that is not only fair to Nova Scotia taxpayers, but fair to those public servants that are delivering services on behalf of us, Mr. Speaker. Part of that was also looking at long service awards, Mr. Speaker. I want to remind all members of this House, 70% of the population in this province does not have a pension plan. Not only do we have one in the public sector, Mr. Speaker, but the long service award, Mr. Speaker, is in addition to a pension plan that is there. What we've asked is not to remove anything from anyone, Mr. Speaker, that they've earned at the bargaining table. What we have said very clearly and fairly, we cannot continue to allow it to grow at a rate that the 70% of the population can't afford. Come to the table, Mr. Speaker. We've treated them fair. We've respected the things they've already earned at the bargaining table. We'll continue to do so. But let me be straight. We will live within the fiscal means of this province.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Health. Clearly, he is getting us ready to tell us that he has no plan to reopen the mental health unit, the short-stay unit at the Aberdeen Hospital. He's trying to convince the people of Pictou County that rely on that service that they're better off without it. Well, no one is going to believe that, Mr. Speaker, when that day comes. They are worse off. Psychiatrists, mental health professionals, even the police who rely on that inpatient facility know they cannot do their jobs if there isn't a mental health unit at the Aberdeen Hospital, Mr. Speaker. So I would like to ask the Minister of Health to simply confirm the obvious that he has no intention of reopening the mental health unit.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. What I can tell the member opposite, Leader of the Opposition, is that the entire team from the Provincial Health Authority, under the leadership guidance of Dr. Corey, and those who are on the ground in Pictou are working as we speak to map out a plan to provide the very best of mental health services to the people of Pictou County.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, the very best mental health services include a short-stay facility at the mental health unit at the Aberdeen Hospital for people with mental illness who need help in northern Nova Scotia. It is simply obvious to anyone that works in the system or relies on it that you cannot have better service without that facility in place. That's why it was the Minister of Health who said it would only be a temporary closure. Now he says that someone else is working in an alternative plan. That is not right, Mr. Speaker. It is getting close to Christmas. The demands on our mental health delivery system are going up, not down. The Minister of Health stands here now and is going to point the finger at someone else because he made a promise and he's not going to keep it, Mr. Speaker. So why doesn't he just get it over with? Tell us right now. If he knows what's happening with that mental health unit, tell us now.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. What I can tell the Leader of the Opposition and the people of Pictou County is that they have outstanding clinicians in Pictou County delivering mental health services 24/7, 365. And the member opposite is completely wrong when he talks about Christmas coming and more use of mental health facilities. Actually, if you take a look at the review of statistics, there are less people in short-term and long-term mental health units during the Christmas period.
The Honourable Member for Queens Shelburne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Transportation. Good consultation means good legislation. We are hearing from a number of community groups, including Walk and Roll, the Halifax Cycling Coalition, and the Ecology Action Centre, who are concerned with the Minister's decision to dramatically increase various fines for pedestrians. Mr. Speaker, did the Minister consult with these organizations about $697 fine to pedestrians who don't push a button when crossing the sidewalk?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I do genuinely thank the member for the question. Look, this has been a very hot topic here in Halifax and across the province since the Bill 133 was introduced. This really is about shared responsibility, Mr. Speaker. And when you look at the fines, the levels that we had, 697.50 represented that highest infraction, which is a Category G. Mr. Speaker, the reason why we did that, we did consult, of course, with RSAC. We have a number of very experienced and dedicated road safety engineers that have input on this. Look, we're just trying to do the right thing, Mr. Speaker. We've had 51 fatalities, 1,940 injuries since 2007. There's a severe problem with pedestrian safety, with the decisions being made by drivers, pedestrians, all of us that share the road. Mr. Speaker, this was not intended to target anyone. We just want to keep people safe. That was the point of this. I'm listening to the conversations. I'm hearing the reactions. And I can tell you there's very good arguments on both sides, Mr. Speaker. We'll always continue to listen. But at the end of the day, we want to make sure people get home safely, whether they be drivers or pedestrians.
The Honourable Member for Queen's Shelburne.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, safety is a shared responsibility, and the NDP caucus is all about promoting safety. But the $697 fine for pedestrians is just too high and unfair to low-income Nova Scotians. The Ecology Action Centre has questioned why this fine for not stopping or for not stopping for a school bus with flashing lights is less than the minister's $697.50 fine for pedestrians. Mr. Speaker, can the minister explain why this fine for a person who doesn't push a button when crossing a sidewalk is higher than a driver not stopping for a child getting on of a school bus?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Motor Vehicle Act is 100 years old. There's a lot of fines that were developed at an individual basis, Mr. Speaker. We have committed to looking at the collective use of fines and the levels that we have across all fines that we enact here and implement here in the province, Mr. Speaker. And we are committed to doing that. There are AT groups, active transportation groups out there that we will consult with in the new year to talk about some of the bigger issues that have come to light because of this conversation. But, Mr. Speaker, I said this respectfully. I don't believe that this is targeting or impacting low-income Nova Scotians or AT users. This is about road safety. We want to keep everybody safe, Mr. Speaker. We want drivers and pedestrians to obey the rules, make sure they get home safely. Mr. Speaker, I'd love to be able to stand here in the House this time next year and say that no one paid $697 and we all got home safely. No deaths, far fewer accidents, Mr. Speaker. Let's protect Nova Scotians. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. The short-stay unit at the Aberdeen Hospital has been closed for more than 4 months. Apparently, the issue of recruiting staff for the unit has been the chief reason for its closure. My question to the Minister, what is the status of the job postings and how many interested applicants have applied?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. What I can tell the member opposite, first of all, the unit has been closed 130 days. There have been 8 patients that required short-term care. Most were able to get looked after in nearby Truro. And in terms of the posting, those required positions are up on the website today.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Mr. Speaker, many people in Pictou County are worried about the future of this unit and have spoken out that it has saved their lives or the life of a loved one. It's very important that it be reopened. The Minister mentioned earlier the challenges while recruiting. My question to the Minister, what were the challenges that occurred during the recruitment process?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Quite a number of the recent psychiatrists that come to the province come from the UK. August, when recruitment started is a more difficult time of the year, especially for those who have graduated and are looking at positions. And so we've had that ongoing issue over the last number of months to get the right team in place.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is also for the Minister of Health. Can the Minister confirm whether his long-term plan for improved mental health services in Pictou County involves having patients assessed at the Aberdeen and then moved to another hospital for treatment where that initial assessment deems admission is necessary?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. As the member from Pictou would know, that sometimes when there are assessments, they will go on to the Abbey Lane or possibly to the provincial hospital in Dartmouth, the Purdy Building, and that's where they may be going for short or long-term treatment. There are an array of services here in the province, and we have now, under the one provincial health authority, we have access to all of the best clinicians at different places in the province.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, in the absence of a short-stay unit in Pictou County, anyone that's assessed as needing admission has to be moved elsewhere. Just yesterday, I met with a family in just that situation. The psychiatrist in New Glasgow assessed this person as needing to be admitted, couldn't find a bed anywhere, had a bed in Truro, lost it, couldn't transfer there fast enough, ended up with a bed in Sydney, had a very harrowing journey to get to Sydney, only to arrive and find out that the psychiatrist in Sydney insisted on reassessing them, and he assessed them differently than the psychiatrist in Pictou County. No bed for that person. Back to Pictou County. Mr. Speaker, obviously that's not acceptable, so if the minister's plan involves having people assessed as needing admission, being moved around, has the minister thought about the situation where a second psychiatrist in another location is going to reassess, and is it fair to families to have those types of situations?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much for the question. And, Mr. Speaker, what I can say to the Honourable Member is that I just heard details of that circumstance that he's describing as I was walking here today. And that is an unfortunate situation for that family and for the person who needed treatment. In this particular case, we are looking into why circumstances unfolded as they did, and I'm prepared to share that information with the member opposite.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, last week in question period, the Minister of Health indicated that a CEO of a long-term care facility in Pictou County told him that the Liberal government could make further cuts to nursing homes and not impact care. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to ask the Minister, how much is the Minister prepared to cut in the budgets to long-term care facilities that so many seniors from across the province call home?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I've been fortunate now to visit over half of the long-term care facilities in our province, and I see the great care that goes on. What the member opposite missed was nothing. There was nothing said about a cut, but some of the administrators are saying we can create greater efficiencies and keep the high quality of care in our long-term care facilities.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, when government changes and inherits a deficit, they don't cut nursing home funding, Mr. Speaker. The previous government inherited a $700 million deficit, and we didn't cut the operating budgets of long-term care facilities. Not 5 cents, Mr. Speaker. The McDonald and the Ham government didn't do it either, Mr. Speaker. No government, well, maybe the Savage government, Mr. Speaker, may have done that. Nursing homes have advised us that they have been unable to replace equipment, and they've even started charging families for foot care, Mr. Speaker. So when will the minister tell us the true impact the cuts will have to nursing homes across the province?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the question. And what we need to be reminded of, it's been now just about 9 months since the budget came down, and what we didn't really make, if you wish, any strong cuts, because we actually put $6.9 million more into long-term care this fiscal year. And What we didn't do was perhaps give the increase that normally had been given for inflation. And the nursing homes that I have visited have made adjustments and are keeping up the same high-quality care that they provide.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, 3 years ago, myself and the member for Richmond were on the CTV, ATV News with Steve Murphy. We were interviewed. I'm sure people will remember the infamous photo of the gentleman who was hanging off the back of the sheriff's transport vehicle. He had broken through the rear window and was about to jump off and leap to freedom. And he did. But, Mr. Speaker, we have had another incident. On Friday last week, we had a prisoner escape custody in Truro. The prisoner was not handcuffed. Incidents of mistaken release and mishandling of prisoners have been happening frequently, Mr. Speaker, and they're putting Nova Scotians at risk. Has the Minister of Justice called an investigation to find out what is wrong so this can be fixed?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the question from the member opposite. And certainly this incident of a prisoner escaping shouldn't have happened, so we'll start with that. And an investigation was begun right away to get the facts and find out what exactly occurred in the transport. So I think that that's very pertinent to know that there are 25,000 transports a year that the Sheriff's Office does take care of, or our sheriffs take care of, and we, as I say, we want to review all of our processes in this case.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, that is positive to hear, and not to pick too much on the member for Richmond, but at that time, the member had indicated we do this sometimes, Mr. Speaker, in opposition. But and perhaps the minister will agree. The member from Richmond at the time had said these are basic operating requirements to ensure the safety of Nova Scotians that are not being followed. It's only a matter of time before something serious is going to happen where an innocent Nova Scotian is going to get hurt because of these mistakes. So, Mr. Speaker, I think we can all agree in the legislature that that's true. My question for the minister, does the minister agree that with basic operating requirements not being followed, it is only a matter of time before somebody can get seriously hurt?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I want to assure all the members of the House and all Nova Scotians that we will be looking into this to find out what was wrong, whether things were followed properly, and what we can do, what we can learn from this as well. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Education. Mr. Speaker, a number of schools throughout Nova Scotia are in disrepair and many need replacing. While many schools in the Halifax area fall into this category, Cole Harbour High is not one of those. A community group indicates that there are currently 1,664 empty desks in high schools in the Dartmouth Cole Harbour area, and I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. The school board's long-term outlook projects that utilization will be steady at 80%. However, the construction of a new high school in Eastern Passage will reduce utilization by 50%, and I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. My question to the minister, does the minister believe that the building of a new $15 million high school within a catchment area for a school that is underutilized is in the best interest of students, parents, and taxpayers?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question. I would take the member and all members of the House back to October of 2013. At that time, there had been a capital plan that had been approved by the previous government. When we came into office, it was our commitment to honour the decisions that had been made by the previous government. We did do that. A school at Eastern Passage was one of those. The decision had been made prior to us coming into government, and we honoured that commitment.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Mr. Speaker, in the December 1st issue of the Chronicle Herald, a parent of a student from Eastern Passage expressed concern that excessive services and programs currently available wouldn't be available to students at the new school. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. Improving access to programs and services for students must be the main priority for the department. My question for the minister, does the minister agree that any decision that would spend tens of millions of dollars and potentially lead to fewer services and even more unused space would be a bad decision for students?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the member opposite. The decisions about what programs are offered in what schools across our province are decisions that are made by the school board, and I trust that the school board will be certainly looking at the interests of the students in all schools as they determine which programs they will deliver.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Mr. Speaker, last February, the Minister of Health was considering tendering home care services in our province. But during this summer's by-election, a continuing care assistant with the New Waterford Home Care Services told the Herald that she personally received a letter from the minister assuring her that the government's proposal to issue tender for home care would not go ahead, Mr. Speaker, and I'll table that. Yet during the session of the legislature, the minister told the reporters that the restructuring of the Victoria Order of Nurses would help the VON compete for the Nova Scotia home care tender. So I'd like to ask the minister, when will the Minister of Health advise all Nova Scotians home care providers about his plan for home care tenders?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And we all know that with home care, as with many of the practices that government have had in the past are not working as well as they should. We put $33 million more into home care, and we know we still have to get greater efficiencies in order to be able to address all the needs. It is our hope that contracts can be negotiated without having to go and put it out to tender. Requests for proposals, and that process now is getting very close, where the department will start a negotiated process with all of the providers on that individual basis, but will have requirements in those contracts.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
I guess the minister forgot to put that in the letter, Mr. Speaker, during the by-election in Cape Breton. Convenient for the government, I guess, Mr. Speaker, at the time. When Ontario offered a standard tender for home care in the 90s, the move led to insecure employment, which in turn resulted in low wages and staff shortages and a higher home care wait list. We don't want to see that happen here in Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. So can the Minister of Health advise, or what does the Minister of Health have to say to the patients concerned about losing the home care workers that have been caring for them for the last number of years, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and please, the member, former health minister, raise that whole issue, because one of the requirements, the deliverables in the new contract, will be a requirement to have, in fact, a very small number of providers going into homes to deliver home care. It provides a better quality of care. And what I can say also to the MLAs from Cape Breton in particular today, to follow up on the comments during the by-election, is in fact the seven agencies in Cape Breton have already taken great measures and great strides to improve efficiencies and work together as units in Cape Breton.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister responsible for Natural Resources. Mr. Speaker, in response to firewood shortages, the Department of Natural Resources has issued three tenders for the harvesting of firewood. These tenders were posted on November 14th and closed on December the 4th. And I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. Most Nova Scotians who rely on wood heat would need to have secured and dried their wood supply by now, not to mention problems associated with burning green wood. My question to the minister, does the minister agree that the timing of these tenders is not ideal for improving the supply of firewood for Nova Scotians for this heating season?
The Honourable Acting Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. First of all, it is important to recognize that all indications that the department has received this year would suggest that market conditions for firewood supply has leveled out, and that we have a consistent supply of firewood across the province, and that we haven't heard of any areas that are suffering from a particular shortage. The three tenders that we did release were in those three counties, Mr. Speaker, if you remember last year, that where we did not receive bids on the tenders that we released. So we wanted to try again this year to see if we could find some bids for those specific areas that weren't serviced last year. And, of course, this would be for next year's season.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I appreciate that most of the wood supply in Nova Scotia comes from private land. Regardless of volume, we are discussing tenders issued by this government to add firewood into the market from Crown land. As the Minister has indicated, last year some of the tenders were not filled. Last year, these tenders were open for 20 days in August, and for some, harvesting had to be completed before December the 1st, and I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Minister, will the Department consider posting tenders earlier in the year in order to increase the chances of awarding the contracts and improving the supply of firewood available to Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Acting Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The tenders that were released last year were in response to a firewood shortage. So when the department was aware that there was a shortage in the market as a result of the reduction in contractors, then the department did act, Mr. Speaker. Last year, in partnering with our private sector friends, and along with these firewood tenders that we sent out, we actually tripled the wood supply for last year's market, Mr. Speaker. I think something we can all be very proud of. We wanted to try. Thank you very much. We wanted to send these tenders out again this year, specifically in the areas where there were no bids last year, to see if the market conditions have changed, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health and Wellness. In a June 4, 2015 article in the Advertiser, the Minister announced the opening of a collaborative health care centre for Kingston in the Annapolis Valley. And my question for the Minister is, how much will this collaborative health care centre cost, or what has it cost, and when will it be open?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I'm awfully pleased that the member for Kings North is concerned about the health of those who live in Kings West. And that's a good day for us. What the member opposite needs to know is that the contract is worked out between the health authority and the developer in the valley, and that has not been disclosed to me.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Through you, Mr. Speaker, for the answer to that question. As the Minister knows, frequently when these types of centres are open, such as in Digby, there's community fundraising. There was $2.1 million raised in Digby. There's been $8 million raised for the hospice in the Annapolis Valley. What was the fundraising that was, what community fundraising was announced or what done for this project?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Again, as the member opposite probably knows, that across the province, when collaborative health practices or centres, this is a collaborative practice and not that comprehensive health centre as we would have in Clare and in Digby. And in this case here, this is a contract between the doctors, the developer, and the provincial health authority. And so there was no fundraising in this case.
The Honourable Member for Queens Shelburne.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Acting Minister of the Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Speaker, in 2013, the province of Nova Scotia regained control of more than 550,000 acres of Crown land, beautiful South Shore forests that are now being used by families and business alike. Respecting and enjoying those new Crown lands is a responsibility we all share, and the government has a significant role to play. Mr. Speaker, can the Acting Minister tell us how many natural resources officers have been added in the last 2 years to help enforce the laws in the forest?
The Honourable Acting Minister of Natural Resources.
Mr. Speaker, the Enforcement Division of DNR has actually been transferred to the Department of Environment. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Queens Shelburne.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday we learned through news reports that 1,500 charges have been laid in relation to illegal hunting in Nova Scotia within the last 4 years, and I can table that. Mr. Speaker, in the last budget, the government attempted to consolidate conservation officers with natural resources, with inspectors from health and wellness, fisheries and aquaculture, and agriculture into one division. of Department of Environment. Mr. Speaker, can the acting minister tell us what feedback he is receiving from DNR officers about the impact of consolidating these that have the ability to do their job? Thank you.
The Honourable Acting Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Of course, any direct feedback from our officers would actually be directed to the minister now responsible for those folks. But, Mr. Speaker, you know, in all honesty, we can say this is a period of transition. Amalgamating all of these enforcement units together, and one makes sense financially, of course, logistically. It will take time to iron out any of the challenges that that process has created. But at the end of the day, Mr. Speaker, we're going to have a stronger enforcement division for government with resources that are consolidated and being used appropriately under a department whose focus is those very things. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, it's been 21 months. My question for the Minister of Justice. It's been 21 months since Dwight Bishop, the provincial ombudsman, retired. We do know the government had a competition. They advertised. They had 81 applicants. They had interviews. They even had a successful candidate recommended. But they've held off on hiring for this position. Can the Minister explain why?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And that's a very good question. The Ombudsman is an important position. They report to the legislature, as the members know. And I had said, I think you began this question at the end of one of our question periods, and I'd said that we're very fortunate to have a very strong person acting in that position right now. So we can be very assured that the work is being done and very professionally. But to answer the member's question about the delay, we had looked at combining a couple of different offices. That has been decided now that we're not going to do that, and we'll be looking at this recruitment.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I think the Minister may be referring to the Freedom of Information Office and possibly combining with the Ombudsman. And, of course, we've asked for the Freedom of Information person, that officer, to be an officer of the legislature. We maintain our position on that. We believe that's important for the independence of that office. But hearing, and certainly no disrespect to the acting ombudsperson, but, Mr. Speaker, it is. I'm happy to hear the minister is going ahead. We know how important the ombudsman is. It promotes the principles of fairness, integrity, and good governance, and ensures that government decisions and processes are open and transparent. Can the minister give us some idea on the timing of when the position will be filled by somebody who is not just acting, but somebody who is full-time and in the position for the long term?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I don't have an exact time frame to provide to the House, but I can say that the decision's been made about not combining the two offices, and therefore we've given the green light to begin the competition. So that's the next step.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth South.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last week, the Community Homes Action Group released their 2015 report card on this government's record on fulfilling its commitment to transform services for Nova Scotians living with disabilities. The report card unfortunately outlined that service users, service providers, families, and experts believe that this government is doing a poor job. When I asked the minister about why her department had refused a cost-neutral proposal to open a new 4-bedroom community home, she did not address the question, and I will table that, Mr. Speaker. I will ask again, why has the minister refused a cost-neutral community housing project?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you. The safety and the requirements needed to ensure that everyone who has unique and special needs in the disability community are met are critical to the government. I have said time and time again that we are on track for where we need to be in a decade-long process. Each home that is opened in this province will meet the unique needs of the individuals that will be calling that place home. We're not going to rush it. I was not surprised at the report card last week. I understand the impatience, but we are going to make this transformation securely, safely, and responsibly. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth South.
Speaker, Mr. Speaker, according to a briefing note prepared for the Minister, obtained by us through a Freedom of Information request, there are 1,100 Nova Scotians on the residential support wait list, and I will table that. Not only is the Minister refusing to create new beds, she is eliminating existing ones. In the CHAG report card, one service provider stated that a 10-bed group home for adults who have experienced mental health issues was replaced with a 4-bed small option home, and I will table that as well. Mr. Speaker, I don't understand why how the minister can say she's making progress on the disability support roadmap when the truth is that she's taking us backwards. Mr. Speaker, can the minister explain the decreasing the number of spaces for Nova Scotians with disabilities when the wait list is at 1,100 individuals?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you. In the spirit of the roadmap for transformation of disability services, clearly advocates and families have told us they do not want 10-bed residential facilities. They want 4, 5 at the most. So individuals that are moved out from larger facilities are moved back into the community, which is exactly in line of what the roadmap and families deserve and want in this province.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Health. Last summer, the government announced they would be seeking input from Nova Scotians on the continuing care strategy. Thousands of seniors and their families have been struggling to get the care that they need across the province, and hundreds have ended up in hospital as they continue to wait. The deadline for feedback was the second week of September. So my question to the minister is, how many responses were received, and will the minister present that feedback to the House?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I know that the survey and submissions have gone on through an extended period of time. I have seen the draft copy of the continuing care refresh, and we should have that available. It's a document to serve for 18 months, while the next 5 years or 10-year document is put in place. In fact, to use the words of the member opposite himself, one of the failures of the past strategy was that it didn't get updated, it didn't evolve as it should as times changed.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Now, one of the proposals in the continuing care plan, or the survey, was to impose user fees and direct funding, and I'll quote from a Canadian Press article, and it says the minister says they'll also examine user fee structures, and that's from, I believe, July 30th of this year. So at the time of the release, minister said the department would continue to examine the user fee structures for home care and other services. So my question to the minister is, does the minister plan to impose user fees to those seeking continuing care services?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What I can tell the member opposite, former health minister, is that when the next contracts are made for home care, there won't be a discrepancy from the lowest provider to the highest of $23.07, and that's where the real gains will be made to help all Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Colchester, Musqueam-Abbott Valley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is going to be for the Minister of Community Services. As an MLA, I'm sure every MLA in this room has a number of families coming to them who really cannot afford to live in our present society, at least live well. I often ask myself the question, those that are on social assistance, how can they possibly get through a month? My question is, does the minister have any strategies now that they are working on so that these folks' lifestyle will be eased a bit?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
I'd like to thank the member for the question and wish him a happy birthday as well. Um, I always answer. We have diligently been working since we've taken office on benefit reform. We know that basic necessities in the province of Nova Scotia are very difficult for people. We know that over previous years, $18 million has been invested in rates and people still struggle today. We know we have a system that's antiquated, and we know we have a system that doesn't meet the needs of the people who it's supposed to. That's why the investment in benefit reform is going to make comprehensive structural change that will meet the needs of the people who turn to us for the help in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Colchester-Musquodoboit Valley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In trying to address this question, a number of things just kind of surface in my mind. One of the things that has surfaced, would it be possible for those who are on social assistance to be able to do just odd jobs, part-time work, get money for those, and not be penalized for it?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, and I thank you for the question. That actually is happening now. People can work while on income assistance. They are able to keep $150 and then 30% of their wages, and if they're part of the disability program, it's 330%. But that's really one of the structures that needs to change so that more people who are working can transition off of the program without being cut off directly. We know that there are many reforms that can happen in income assistance, and we're really committed to making those reforms over the coming months.
The Honourable House Leader for the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotians from one end of the province to the other continue to be concerned around closures of emergency rooms. I'm wondering if the minister could advise the House when he'll table the emergency room accountability report in the session.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The member opposite, former Health Minister, knows that it's important to take a look at our emergency room closures. Within that report now, which will be coming out in the next few days, it's important to note that there are now a series of planned closures across the province. The report will show some big improvements, and it'll also show the areas where we still have challenges. And I look forward to tabling that report and starting to work on the areas that are of concern. Areas that we sometimes forget is, in fact, the service that the
Order, please.
Member op-
Time allotted for oral questions put by members to ministers has expired. We'll now move on to government business. The Honourable Government House Leader.
Appropriate. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, would you please call private and local bills for third reading?
We'll now call private and local bills for third reading.
Yeah. Speaker, would you please call Bill number 125, the Zion United Baptist Church of Yarmouth Dissolution Act?
We'll now call Bill number 125, the Zion Baptist Church Act. The Honourable Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I am happy to stand and speak to this act very briefly. I think it's just worth taking a few moments to talk about the history of the Zion Church in Yarmouth and downtown Yarmouth on Parade Street, and commemorate all the great work that's